Is political polarization affecting your relationships? Practicing kindness might make interactions better. This is The People's Pharmacy with Terry and Joe Graydon.
There's surprisingly strong research supporting the benefits of kindness for all parties. Can compassionate behavior prolong your life?
Our guest is a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. She will teach us how some behavioral changes could improve our health and happiness. A bonus could be longevity.
We'll find out how compassion and forgiveness can overcome tribalism and polarization. It can also protect your telomeres, a marker of aging.
Coming up on The People's Pharmacy, why practicing kindness could prolong your life.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, bird flu, otherwise known as influenza A, H5N1, has been spreading around the globe for years. Initially, it only seemed to affect birds, but this highly pathogenic avian influenza has now found a way to infect dairy cattle, dolphins, seals, skunks, foxes, cats, dogs, and pigs. Farm workers have also been infected with H5N1. Scientists have been asking how this virus managed to spread from birds to cows to cats and now to humans. A new study published in Nature Microbiology reveals that the virus has mutated so that it can be transmitted through the air. The Dutch researchers studied virus shedding by infecting ferrets. They tested a number of different virus strains, including a recent one isolated from dairy workers. They report that virus shedding into the air is becoming easier with newer H5N1 viral strains. They call for more research into how the virus spreads among cattle and its capacity for airborne transmission. At last count, 55 people have been infected with bird flu. Most cases of H5N1 have not been serious, though one Canadian teenager became critically ill. Researchers do worry that surveillance has been lackadaisical and pandemic preparedness since COVID-19 leaves a lot to be desired.
When it comes to respiratory infections, we have good news and bad news. COVID-19 cases are way down, about as low as they've been since the start of the pandemic. Cases of influenza and respiratory syncytial virus are also relatively modest, but public health officials warn family gatherings around Thanksgiving can start spreading infections within a week or two. Mycoplasma pneumoniae is already causing problems. This bacterial infection is often referred to as walking pneumonia, and young children are the most vulnerable. It's likely that with really cold weather on its way, people will be staying indoors and spreading a variety of upper respiratory tract infections to family and friends.
Vitamin C remains a controversial treatment for the common cold, despite recent evidence that it can reduce the risk of catching colds and shorten the duration of severe symptoms. A new study found a different kind of benefit for vitamin C. Researchers at the University of Iowa performed a randomized clinical trial of high-dose intravenous vitamin C to treat stage 4 metastatic pancreatic cancer. The ascorbic acid was given in combination with standard treatment, and the control group got standard treatment only. The results were so promising that the investigators stopped the trial early. Vitamin C doubled the average survival time from 8 months to 16 months. The lead investigator added that patients seemed to feel better when vitamin C was added to their regimen. Other trials have also found benefit in adding intravenous vitamin C to chemotherapy and radiation for hard-to-treat brain cancer, such as glioblastoma. Over 50 years ago, Nobel Prize winner Dr. Linus Pauling advocated high-dose intravenous vitamin C for the treatment of terminal cancer patients. Many physicians dismissed this approach, but the latest research confirms that he was on the right track after all.
Everyone is aware that we have a microbiome within our digestive tract. It's a whole ecological system unto itself, containing bacteria, viruses, and fungi. For decades, medical students learned that the lungs, the brain, and other organ systems did not harbor such microorganisms. But now, evidence is mounting that there's a microbiome in the lungs as well as the brain. A research paper published in the journal Alzheimer's and Dementia describes a number of cases linking microbial infection of the brain to cognitive decline and dementia. The microbes included Borrelia burgdorferi, which causes Lyme disease, and Cryptococcus neoformans, a fungal infection. But even healthy brains aren't devoid of microbes. A researcher in New Mexico has painstakingly confirmed the presence of a microbiome in the brains of fish. She hypothesizes that if fish have a brain microbiome, then humans probably do too. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. The world seems to be a dangerous place these days. Politics have become increasingly polarized all around the world. That has seeped into other areas of our social lives. Anger and hostility seem to be rampant. But studies show that kindness, forgiveness, and gratitude not only contribute to optimism and happiness, but also support better health and longevity.
To learn more about the scientific research on kindness, we turn to Dr. Immaculata DeVivo. She is the faculty co-director of the sciences at Harvard Radcliffe Institute, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, and professor of epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Dr. DeVivo, with Daniel Lumera, is the author of The Biology of Kindness, Six Daily Choices for Health, Well-Being, and Longevity.
Welcome to the People's Pharmacy, Dr. Immaculata DeVivo.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. DeVivo, you are a professor of medicine at Harvard and a professor of epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. That means, I think for most people, a very hard scientist grounded in data. How in the world did you get interested in the biology of kindness?
That is a great question. And let me start by saying that I am intellectually promiscuous. And yes, I am a trained scientist, old school lab data, and my research has focused on cancer, both education-wise and training, and of course now research-wise. And when one studies cancer, you cannot study telomeres, which I'm sure we're going to get into later. And so working with telomeres and working with understanding mechanisms of cancer, which we know have both a genetic part as well as a non-genetic part. We also like to say an interplay of genes and environment. I became very interested in understanding the biological underpinnings of behavioral interventions in medicine. In my understanding and of the data and observing, and also driven by incredible curiosity, was that these diverse behavioral practices, like exercise, or even, as we will get into, meditation, ultimately are acting through biology. And it's not just magic. And so I was really driven to understand that process.
Dr. DeVivo, you wrote The Biology of Kindness with a co-author, Daniel Lumera. He is a biologist who was a Buddhist monk for many years, and he too was interested in creating a bridge between modern science and ancient wisdom. How did you work together to consider the scientific basis for the health benefits of kindness?
I will keep this answer short. Essentially, this was a collaboration, as we say in my business, of mind-body. We met at a meeting in 2019, in the late 2019, and where I presented a lot of the data that's actually in the book. And he was a participant, but as at the time, a Buddhist monk, where he was offering the practice of meditation. And after hearing my presentation, which focused actually on loving kindness meditation at this meeting, he came up to me and asked if I was interested in putting together a book on this this concept of mind-body and towards healthier, longer well-being. And I really looked at him very strangely. As a scientist, I have written, as you know, peer-reviewed articles and chapters and textbooks, but a trade book was not something I felt skilled at doing. And but he was very persistent, and he kept after me. And so I actually acquiesced once the 2020, the turn of January or February of 2020, where I said I would do it. And then, as we all know, March of 2020, we had an international global lockdown. And that lockdown afforded me the time to actually put this book together with him. And as you know, the book was originally written in Italian, which is my mother tongue. And yeah, we've been very active, both now in the Italian version of the book, the Spanish version of the book, and now the English version of the book.
Dr. DeVivo, you mentioned the word telomeres, and it kind of, we passed by it very quickly. So what are telomeres? Why do they matter? And what in the world do they have to do with the biology of kindness?
Briefly, telomeres are hexameric repeats. They're DNA at the ends of your chromosome, and often been described as the plastic bits on shoelaces. They're there, mm-hmm. and they serve the same purpose, which is to keep the chromosome from fraying. And telomeres have been now recognized as these biological markers of aging or clock. And they got that name because normally in somatic cells, as the cell ages, the telomeres shorten gradually over time. And so it enumerates or it signals the age of a cell. So as the cell gets older, the telomeres shorten, and eventually the cell dies. So by cellular aging, by extension to tissue aging, and now the research is very robust to show that it's associated with early onset of disease, it's associated with mortality, it's associated with morbidity. People, long-lived people, like the centenarians, tend to have longer telomeres than those who die much sooner. And yeah.
Dr. DeVivo, do they start with longer telomeres or do their telomeres shorten more gradually?
That is a great question. So in order to determine, there are different, there's a lot of dynamics, telomere dynamics that we have learned over the years. And there are female babies, for instance, are born with longer telomeres than male babies. And there's lots of papers on that, including papers that I've co-authored with colleagues at Children's Hospital. In order to determine, you need to have a baseline measure on, you need to baseline these centenarians to know how long they were compared to others. And so in the work that I've done with centenarians, we did not have baseline data on them. But I can tell you in work that I've done in collaboration with others, it's not, they do have a slower rate of attrition. And that's because of other genetic, if you want to call it variations in other genes that control that as well. So it's a combination. And of course, these long-lived people, they live in these blue zones, which have a certain lifestyle that also promotes longevity. So it is, again, it goes back to me really trying to understand the biological bases for these behavioral lifestyle as well as the genetics.
Dr. DeVivo, I don't want you to get into the weeds too much, but for those of us who have never seen a telomere, and that's spelled T-E-L-O-M-E-R-E, how do you measure the length of these structures that are so tiny?
Great question. So in my lab, and for a bit now, we have a way to take DNA from people's cells and then subject them to a technique called quantitative PCR. And using that technique, we are able to measure an individual's telomere. And the telomere that we can measure in blood can serve as a proxy for the person's telomere throughout their body. It's not exactly perfect, but it's a good enough proxy. And there are studies and data to show that there are correlations between telomere lengths across cell types. So it's a good enough proxy.
Okay. And then when we... Mm-hmm. Dr. DeVivo, in The Biology of Kindness, you discuss how stress affects our telomeres. Can you tell us just a bit about that?
Yes. Activation of the stress pathway is implicated in telomere attrition. And that's because a byproduct of the stress pathway is inflammation. And three ways in which your telomeres get shorter. The normal process of cell division. And then there's also oxidative stress and inflammation. And there's, of course, normal endogenous levels of oxidative stress and inflammation. What I was mostly interested in is when you have an overabundant amount of inflammation. And you do get dysregulated inflammation from stress hormones. So the idea is that, just briefly, the stress pathway is an evolutionary adapted pathway to respond to acute stress, right? If you're running from the lion, you turn on this pathway that increases your heart rate and correct. And then, you know, but it's very short-lived, and it's short-lived because you need to mobilize. You need to move out of that way so that you can survive. The issue is that when it is on chronically, your stress pathway doesn't know if you're running away from the lion or just sitting in traffic. So the chronic activation of stress pathway will lead to chronic activation of the hormones, stress hormones, and of increased chronic inflammation, which all takes a toll on your telomere length.
You're listening to Dr. Immaculata DeVivo. Her book is The Biology of Kindness.
When we return, find out how kindness and forgiveness can mitigate the harms of chronic stress.
Could kindness overcome tribalism and polarization?
How can kindness help with cancer treatment?
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon. Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Terry Graydon.
And I'm Joe Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by CocoVia Dietary Supplements. CocoVia Memory Plus is formulated with 750 milligrams of cocoa flavanols, a level clinically proven to improve three different types of memory and support brain function. More information at CocoVia.com.
You have probably heard the phrase, often referred to as a Chinese curse, "May you live in interesting times." In truth, there doesn't seem to be such a proverb in Chinese. The closest scholars have come is that it is better to be a dog in times of tranquility than a human in times of chaos.
Well, we certainly are living in a time of chaos, regardless of your political persuasion. That's led to antagonistic and disagreeable behavior. How can people become more compassionate, courteous, and kind despite their differences?
You might be surprised to learn that practicing kindness to others can be good for your own health. Could gratitude and forgiveness cushion the harms of hostility and stress?
Our guest is Dr. Immaculata DeVivo, who is the Melanie Mason Nemec 71 Faculty Co-Director of the Sciences at Harvard Radcliffe Institute. Dr. DeVivo is also Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School and Professor of Epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. She also serves as Editor-in-Chief of the journal Cancer Causes and Control. Her research focuses on how genetic variants interact with the environment to influence susceptibility to hormonal cancers, especially endometrial cancer. Dr. DeVivo with Daniel Lumera is the author of The Biology of Kindness, Six Daily Choices for Health, Well-Being, and Longevity.
Dr. DeVivo, we were just talking about chronic stress and how it can affect our telomeres. We have spoken on many other People's Pharmacy episodes about the dangers of chronic stress. And you have suggested that practicing kindness and forgiveness can mitigate the harms from chronic stress. Tell us how that works, please.
And give us a little data, if you would be so kind, because it sounds a little touchy-feely, but you're a scientist, so you like data.
Yes, touchy-feely, woo-woo, magic. I've heard it all.
Uh-huh.
And you know, this idea that where does she get off? Well, as a scientist, and you are absolutely right, if there's something that really drives me, it's the data. And so one of the reasons I think this field of telomeres within prosocial behaviors has captured the imagination, not just of the scientists, but of the public, is because By using an objective measure, like a telomere measurement, we're putting a biological handle on these prosocial behaviors, which are considered touchy-feely by some. But in my work with collaborators, I find that these touchy feelings, these prosocial behaviors are not just good as in themselves, but they're actually good for you as we have measured it using the telomere assay. The book title, Kindness, I use the word kindness here as a catch-all for the prosocial behaviors that we address in the book. But there's a lot of data, and data that has been peer-reviewed and replicated, even more importantly, replicated not just by my own immediate colleagues, but globally. And so if we look at the work that we've done and others with kindness, and so kindness is hard to measure. And so in the data world, you have to be able to measure in many ways. But the way in which kindness has been measured is indirectly through caring, through other prosocial behaviors. But in this particular chapter on kindness, we do provide data on how kindness can prevent cardiovascular disease. There are papers that show that it lowers blood pressure and heart rate in people with hypertension. And there's kind behaviors through volunteering or through caring for others has improved clinical conditions.
Well, Dr. DeVivo, we live in what have been described as stressful times. And so it seems to us that anger and suspicion and pessimism have been dominating the public discourse, regardless of your political persuasion. You know, those other people, they're bad and we're good. And this kind of polarization and tribalism, it's my team against your team. And so I'm curious how kindness or optimism can begin to counteract that negativity that has really dominated our political landscape now for many, many years.
Well, I can start with forgiveness and then go to optimism. But one of the things Daniel and I would talk about, because again, he's coming at this from a different approach, he would say,
Ima, as they call me in Italian, he said, you know, we need to show with my work and with your data that forgiveness goes beyond just being a moral thing that one should do, but that it's actually good for your health. In other words, if you can't forgive for moral reasons, you should forgive because maybe for selfish reasons, because it helps you and your health. And so for forgiveness, some of the data comes from work that was done with the veterans in PTSD. And what myself and others have found is that forgiveness lowers anxiety, depression, hostility, addiction. Forgiveness raises positive feelings, satisfaction. What forgiveness does is it fights rumination. You essentially drop the grudge. So, you know, there's that famous expression that many people use that when you forgive someone, what you're doing is really forgiving, you're allowing yourself the freedom to not ruminate, to not carry that grudge. And so that allows, you know, objectively one to measure ways through ways in which we can see that there's less anxiety, less depression. And one of the, well, there are several papers out there, but some of the papers around veterans, the data is quite compelling that, and I don't want to take too long discussing it, but this fact that they're able to forgive, especially themselves, allows them to really deal with their depression and anxiety in a very positive way. And if we move to optimism, optimism is really interesting. I knew very little about optimism until I started working with the optimism group at the Harvard School of Public Health. And just for completeness, optimism is a worldview. It doesn't mean you cannot be upset one day. Of course, you can have a bad day. You can have a good day. It's a worldview that things will work out. It's a worldview that things will be okay. And so the reason I was brought into the optimism research group was that there is a genetic component to optimism. And so I was brought in as someone who could speak to that and put a genetic handle through, put a biological handle on understanding optimism. And it turns out optimism is biologically relevant. There are a few papers that came out of this group to show that optimistic people live longer. And so again, I'm sort of brought in to understand optimism, and then you live longer. Well, what's in between? What's in that black box? And so one way I can contribute to that black box understanding mechanism-wise is to measure the telomere length of optimistic people versus not. And what we found with, not just with telomeres, but in general, the data shows that they have, optimistic people have lower cardiovascular events, and again, higher. Lower mortality, they live longer. The lower cardiovascular incidence and lower mortality is both directly and indirectly a consequence of optimism. So the way I would explain directly is that if we measure telomere lengths, this objective measure on optimists versus not. And the indirect is that most optimistic people, or people who self-report as optimistic, have a healthy lifestyle in general. They exercise more. They are more physically active. They, in generally, have very positive lifestyle. And so that in and of itself will impact your health in a good way.
Absolutely. Dr. DeVivo, you have suggested that optimism and forgiveness and gratitude are all aspects of this idea we're calling kindness. Maybe you can give us a definition for kindness.
And some examples, please.
Well, this is where I would bring in Daniel, because Daniel is really good at defining kindness, and he's created this whole kindness movement. Essentially, remember, I'm this, the data nerd in this relationship. Kindness is really outward gratitude. Kindness is care. Kindness is acts of kindness, we know, volunteerism, even small. Greeting the person who checks you out at the grocery store, throwing a smile at someone. You know, I had a random act of kindness done to me recently where I was fumbling to put money in a meter. Yes, I still use coins for a meter, and I couldn't find the right amount. And some stranger, this is a true story, walked by and fed the meter for me. Yeah. And I'm still in shock as I say this to you, because of course there's so much kindness around us, but in the moment I was taken aback by this person's kindness. And it was in the morning, and it lifted my whole day. And I kept thinking about it, so much so that I'm telling you.
Exactly.
Because, yeah. And I mean, how about that for capturing kindness?
I love
it. It's true. And it was, I can't tell you where, but it was on a random street in Cambridge. Well, close to work. So not that random, but people could figure out where it was. But that's kindness. And also, this idea of giving and taking the focus off of oneself is really healthy in so many ways. Gratitude, we can all be grateful for so many things.
And obviously, you were grateful for this stranger putting 50 cents or 75 cents or however much it took into your meter so that you could leave your car. And as you point out, that kindness lifted your whole day, but it might also have lifted the stranger's day.
And that's a part, I'm glad you brought that up, because it is a symbiotic relationship. It's sort of like when you're helping someone, I work in a food pantry, I volunteer in a food pantry, they're getting something, and I'm getting probably more. It's satisfying. Yes, a huge sense of gratitude.
Dr. DeVivo, you are in part a cancer researcher, and there's not a lot of conditions that are much more stressful than getting a cancer diagnosis. And I'm wondering how kindness can be beneficial when it comes to cancer treatment, because it's such a challenging time. How can both healthcare professionals and patients practice kindness in order to deal with one of the most challenging health problems people face?
Yes, I have been doing cancer research since my graduate school days, and have not given up. It is an interesting and can be heartbreaking disease. Some of the papers that I offer in to show the role of relationships in particular with cancer, and a lot of the work comes from my colleague and good friend Bob Waldinger, to show the how good relationships are so critical for lower mortality and better health. But some breast cancer survivors papers that I refer to, we saw higher mortality in patients who are isolated, who did not have a friend to bring them to the center to get care, who it doesn't always have to be a family member. Any friend, neighbor that could accompany a person to their treatment fared much better than those who had no one, or had just the attendant from the institute accompanying them. So there's this relationships and in particular and meditation, which I'm not sure we're going to cover, mindfulness meditation. Many research centers that offer cancer treatment also have these meditation rooms, mindfulness rooms, because I don't know how much data now is out there to support the benefits of mindfulness and meditation on cancer survivorship. And everything that comes with having cancer, depression, this sense of loss or impending sense of doom. So there are a few papers in many different sections to show the impact of these kinds of behaviors, prosocial behaviors, on cancer therapies and treatment.
As you've said, studies have shown that good relationships are helpful for good health, and kindness is an integral component of good relationships. Your friend and colleague, Bob Waldinger, has shared his extensive work with us, how he has studied social relationships and how they affect our health. What are the main takeaways from Dr. Waldinger's research?
Well, if I've learned anything from Bob Waldinger, is that genes are good, but joy is better. Essentially, he has shown that mortality can increase by 50% in the absence of good relationships. I think the number that I got from his research, which is also something that I'm a big fan of, death risk for isolation equals smoking 15 cigarettes a day. It's higher than being obese or sedentary. These are pretty powerful facts.
You're listening to Dr. Immaculata DeVivo, who is the Melanie Mason Nemec 71 Faculty Co-Director of the Sciences at Harvard Radcliffe Institute. Dr. DeVivo is also Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School and Professor of Epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. She's also the Editor-in-Chief of Cancer Causes and Control, a scientific journal. Dr. DeVivo is co-author with Daniel Lumera of The Biology of Kindness, 6 Daily Choices for Health, Well-Being, and Longevity.
It's time for a short break. After that, we'll take a look at Darwin's survival of the fittest versus the most adaptable.
What are the practical implications of Dr. DeVivo's research?
You'll hear about a study of loving kindness meditation. How did that affect meditators' health?
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon. Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Terry Graydon.
And I'm Joe Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by CocoVia Dietary Supplements, cocoflavanol supplements that support cognitive and cardiovascular health, made with a proven concentrated flavanol extract. More information at CocoVia.com.
Have you experienced loving kindness when you visit a hospital emergency room? What about at your doctor's office? When people are ill or feeling stressed, kindness and compassion can make a huge difference. Such support can also be beneficial for the people who are offering it.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if the organizations that provide customer support eliminated phone trees and barriers, speaking with a human being who's kind and helpful instead of a robot, could reduce frustration and hostility?
We're talking today about the biology of kindness with Dr. Immaculata DeVivo. She is the Melanie Mason Nemec 71 Faculty Co-Director of the Sciences at Harvard Radcliffe Institute. Dr. DeVivo is also Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School and Professor of Epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. In addition, she serves as Editor-in-Chief of the journal Cancer Causes and Control. Her research focuses on how genetic variants interact with the environment to influence susceptibility to hormonal cancers, especially endometrial cancer. Dr. DeVivo, with Daniel Lumera, is the author of The Biology of Kindness, 6 Daily Choices for Health, Well-Being, and Longevity.
Dr. DeVivo, a lot of people like to cite Darwin. Survival of the fittest, the strongest, competition for scarce resources, and the strongest, the fastest, the biggest, they win, and the weakest, they lose. Why do you and your co-author believe that Darwin was really talking about adaptability rather than survival of the fittest?
Great question. I do believe that there has been some misquotation here. Darwin was about genetic variation and adaptability. That person or that species that can adapt to change will, by definition, be able to survive, because one of the greatest pressure on your genes is the environment. And the environment is ever-changing, and so adaptability is strength. And so I challenge that quotation, or that which is allegedly attributed to Darwin about the most competitive, or it's about change. That's what it's all about. And if you can adapt to the environment. You know, there's another famous quote that I often like to use, which is, again, addressing adaptability and change in ways that can help you, is that we cannot change the direction of the wind, right? But you can adjust the sails. So you can adjust ways. And that, I'm going to bring it back to my favorite little telomere, which is, the genome is pretty much immutable. Cannot change your genes. Okay. But over, I don't know now, 30 years or so, this epigenome that we know, the bits of DNA in your epigenome, they're changeable. They're mutable. And so that is the gene environment aspect of my research. How the two can work together. And for me, how they can work together for the better, to not live to be 150 years old, right? But this idea of high quality of life, right? This idea of increasing your health span so it's enjoyable, the quality of life. And what we're learning, not just me as a telomere expert, but, you know, Elizabeth Blackburn and Elisa Epple and all my colleagues, is that life experiences are shaping our telomeres. And so we need to listen to our telomeres, because they're telling us what we need to know to live a healthier, stronger, if you want to put it in the terms of Darwinism, life.
Well, Dr. DeVivo, I'd like to challenge you on practical steps. How people can learn from what you have studied, that adaptability and kindness and forgiveness has real personal value for the individual who is, let's say, sharing or being kind or forgiving. So, you know, modern medicine is all about, you know, the stuff you study, genes and biochemistry and pharmacology. And, you know, if somebody comes in with heart disease or diabetes or hypertension or all of the conditions that people seem to have these days, they're given a pharmaceutical to solve that problem. How do we begin to change medicine so that people like you and your colleagues who are hard scientists are sharing practical ways that patients can learn to be adaptable, to be kind, to forgive? How do we implement your ideas from the biology of kindness?
Well, we want to, people like me, want to augment what's currently people are currently taking or needing as a way of treatment or therapies. This research that falls under the science of prosocial behaviors is meant to complement. And how do we add these activities, these virtues? We have ways in which we can incorporate being more kind, being more grateful, being more optimistic. So there are ways in which one can become, there's a practice of journaling, there's a practice of volunteering. There's also a way to be kind to yourself. And first, as you know, the old airplane, put the mask on you before you put it on your child, or so that you can shore yourself up, right? And ways in which you can do that is through solid, good nutrition, physical activity. Physical activity is joyful. We know that if we move a bit, and then we move a bit in a green space, it does great things for our psyche, for our cholesterol. Ways in which you can, simple ways, music. There are ways in which music can help you in a psychological way by lowering anxiety, lowering depression, but also increasing cardiovascular fitness. Nothing can be done all at once, and it doesn't have to be extreme. But little additions, little bit of physical activity, a little bit of solid nutrition, a little bit of silence or mindfulness, a little bit of kindness. You know, if you see someone struggling by a parking meter, but fumbling for some coins, maybe you can go over and help them out. It doesn't have to be every day, but a little bit, it's sort of like a little bit adds up to a lot. And what I really want to just emphasize is that the contribution that a scientist like myself have made in this field is this idea that you can show that all these kind of kind behaviors, they have an impact at the molecular level and as reflected through telomeres that helps health in yourself and in others.
Dr. DeVivo, you have just mentioned mindfulness. Can you tell us, is that part of being kind to yourself? What is the relevance of mindfulness?
You know, I have a paper that has the word love in it. Yes, I was shocked myself. So I did a telomere study with a very good colleague of mine. She's a psychiatrist at MGH, which revolved around loving kindness meditation. And that's the love in the title of the paper. Where we were studying, well, she was studying, she came to me, and she's studying women who have depression. She was treating them and treating them with the right protocol of treatment. But they were all, some of the women that she noticed were responding better to the treatment were women who were long-term meditators. And long-term in the paper, we define as greater than 4 years of meditation. And it was a particular kind of meditation. It was loving-kindness meditation. And why do I bring this up in relationship to kindness to yourself? Because loving-kindness meditation is a type of meditation that allows you to love yourself first, bring in compassion, felt compassion before you offered to others. And so in this particular paper, we saw that the women who were long-term meditators had longer telomeres, and they also responded better to the treatment that they were getting. But we also found, and there was a control group, because, you know, it's a scientific paper, the control group were women who did no meditation, not even yoga. And there is other data. There's also scan data in that paper, but my contribution, of course, was the telomere work that we generated in the lab. But this kind of treatment is also, again, going back, this kind of meditation also works in the cancer treatment. It improves neuroplasticity. And it turns out you don't have to have 4 years of meditation to have any benefits. There are some papers, publications that show even 10 minutes a day, because this kind of mindfulness, and this, again, it's not just to loving kindness meditation, because there are hundreds, if not 1,000 papers now on meditation and some outcome. But in the underlying benefits is that it lowers the stress. And in the case of loving kindness meditation paper, it protects your telomeres, because these women had longer telomeres compared to non-meditators. And so I speak on behalf of my co-author, Daniel Romero, who meditates 6 hours a day. He has meditated with the best, and he's an incredible practitioner, leads groups, small and large, children, prisoners, the disabled, and there are benefits that cannot be enumerated or quantified.
Dr. DeVivo, I am curious, because as we started our conversation, I suggested that you are a hard scientist. You're a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. You have also studied cancer. How do your colleagues relate to what you're talking about? The internists, the oncologists you work with, the cardiologists, the diabetologists, the neurologists, even the orthopedic surgeons. How do all those super specialists relate to the idea of the biology of kindness?
That's a great question. And I want to be honest and say it depends. Some of my colleagues get it because they see it, experience it, they see the data. And some are still, you know, they're still, I don't want to say suspicious, because that's not a very good word, but they're still trying to understand it. They still want to understand. They still have the curiosity to know how to include prosocial behaviors in their interventions. So the answer is, it's not black and white. There's a range of responses to a book like this.
Well, that brings us to my final question for you, which is, what message do you hope our listeners will take away from our conversation today?
What I hope people get from this is that being good is actually good for you in all writ large. And it doesn't take a lot of effort to do these acts of kindness to yourself, whether through exercise, through good nutrition, through helping a friend. The science is pretty, it gets better and better every day. It's pretty robust to support this idea of these virtues, these pro-social virtues, will help you in the long run in to better your health.
And Dr. DeVivo, for those people who kind of see the world as half empty, that glass, you know, it's not really full, it's half empty. What would your message be to the pessimists who are listening, who say, oh, it's grim out there, people are mean and nasty, how can I possibly be kind and forgiving in this challenging world we live in?
All I can say is that you can try. You've tried pessimism, you've tried anger, and it hasn't really gotten anyone very far. So I would say try. Try to extend a little bit of kindness to yourself first, because I think that's part of it. I'm not a psychiatrist or a therapist, nor do I pretend to be one on TV or the radio. But I think starting close to home will be a good step in the positive direction to being more optimistic, to show a bit more gratitude.
Dr. Immaculata DeVivo, thank you so much for talking with us on the People's Pharmacy today.
It was great talking to you. It was actually really fun. Thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Immaculata DeVivo. She's the Melanie Mason Nemec, 71, Faculty Co-Director of the Sciences at Harvard Radcliffe Institute. Dr. DeVivo is Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School and Professor of Epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. She's also the Editor-in-Chief of the journal Cancer Causes and Control. Her research focuses on how genetic variants interact with the environment to influence susceptibility to hormonal cancers, especially endometrial cancer. Dr. DeVivo is co-author with Daniel Lumera of The Biology of Kindness, 6 Daily Choices for Health, Well-Being, and Longevity.
Lynn Siegel produced today's show. Al Wodarski engineered. Dave Graydon edits our interviews. B.J. Lederman composed our theme music.
This show is a co-production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, with the People's Pharmacy.
The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Cocovia Dietary Supplements. Cocovia Cardio Health is offered in both convenient capsule and powder formats, with each serving containing 500 milligrams of cocoflavanols to support heart health. More information at cocovia.com.
Today's show is number 1410. You can find it online at peoplespharmacy.com. That's where you can share your comments about today's interview. You can also reach us through email, radio@peoplespharmacy.com.
Our interviews are available through your favorite podcast provider, including YouTube Music. You'll find the podcast on our website on Monday morning. This week, the podcast contains additional information that we just couldn't squeeze into the broadcast.
At peoplespharmacy.com, you could sign up for our free online newsletter and get the latest news about important health stories. When you subscribe, you also have regular access to information about our weekly podcast. You could find out ahead of time what topics we'll be covering.
In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next week.